The information I'm about to present is, in my opinion, one of the most crucial things in the health realm that far too few people are talking about. Most of the conversations on health center around diet, nutrition, mental and emotional wellness, and of course, exercise. There's a lot to do with movement, strength and mobility, alignment, PT, you know, kinesiology in general, out there in the podcast and YouTube space. But I still sense a lack of study of the human foot and a lack of understanding of how chronic shoe wearing contributes to some pretty extreme deformity of our feet. So today I'm happy to present to you an in-depth discussion on feet. We're going to discuss exactly how wearing shoes messes up our feet and the entire skeletal structure within. We're going to discuss the phenomenon of earthing and the whole electrical component of grounding yourself to the earth. And then we're going to discuss solutions on how to realign your toes, realign your energetic connection to the earth safely and responsibly, what to wear, what not to wear, how to exercise, how to stretch, how to mobilize your feet, and rewild them and regain a wide toe splay. Nothing on the show is medical advice. I am not a licensed health professional, and nothing you hear on the show is intended to diagnose, cure, or treat anything. This is just information. I'm just a guy. And it's up to you to do with this information that which you see fit. So before we get into it, I gotta say, I fully understand that the information I'm presenting, or some of the claims that I might make, may seem completely ridiculous. This is a fringe topic. It's okay. You know, a lot of my stances on other subjects like diet and disease and the moon landing are also considered ridiculous. So I'm pretty used to it. And as long as I see something that to me, after investigating it and studying it from every angle, seems true, then I'm going to speak on it. And the things I'm not sure of, I won't lie to you. I'm going to tell you, I don't know. This is a journey we're taking together. Radical Health. So what is the situation as we see it today? Well, we have to take a look at the foot. If you want to see what a healthy human foot looks like, next time you're in the presence of a baby, look at their bare feet. Okay, the baby's toes are going to be splayed widely, meaning there's actually space in between each toe. They're not crunched up together yet. And you're going to see an alignment of all the bones and tendons of the toes. Meaning if you look at the big toe and you're looking at the top of the foot, behind the big toe is a tendon that pulls on it. And if those make a perfectly straight line, then that's basically a healthy foot. What you're looking for is a straight line between the big toe and the tendon behind it. You're also looking for the same thing on the pinky toe. So go to the other side of the foot, look at the pinky, look at the tendon pulling the pinky, and see, do they make a straight line or is it crooked? Now look at your feet. Okay, take off your socks and shoes if you're not driving or walking. Look down. Look at your big toe alignment. How straight is it? Do you have mobility? Can you curl it, flex it? Can you extend it? And when it's normal, is the tendon behind it lined up with the toe, and does the toe continue in a straight line? For most people, the answer is going to be no, because what is developing there or has already developed is a bunion. A bunion is when two of the bones in your feet get pushed to the side because the toes have been crunched. If you look at the skeletal structure of a foot online, they have all the bones labeled. You can see the long bones called the metatarsal. There's one for each toe, so five on each foot. And then connected to the metatarsal, you have the phalange. A bunion is when the metatarsal and phalange get shifted and their joint creates this bony protrusion known as a bunion. So really it's caused when we try to cram our toes into skinny little shoes or skinny little points at the end of a shoe, and it causes the entire skeletal structure of the foot to be deformed. The technical name for bunions is hallux valgus, HV. So you can look all over the internet at images of bunions or hallux valgus and see how that metatarsal and the phalange bone are being pushed to the side. And why is this happening? It's because of shoe wearing. People will like to blame genetics for their bunions, and they're partially right in that something here is inherited, but rather the bunion's not inherited, that's still developed. It's the habit of wearing shoes that's inherited. See how this works? Now, I don't have a bunion on my big toe. My big toe is pretty straight. However, on the other side of my feet, on my little toe, I have a what they call a bunionette. It's the same deal over on the pinky. So my pinky is crooked compared to the tendon that pulls behind it. And you could actually measure the angle of the crookedness to see how far off your toe alignment is. Recently, this study called the shoe effect was done. They studied over 1,000 people's feet, and they found that the more remote and rural and indigenous these folks were, the less they wore shoes and the more perfect alignment they had of their feet and toes. The shoe effect is a cool study that you can read. They put a short description of it online. It's a collaboration between My Foot Function and Wide Footwear, WYDE. They're all based in Sweden. And I think they're all Europeans. But anyways, the guy from My Foot Function was traveling to Sri Lanka, and he noticed their feet. He noticed a lot of the villagers' feet were super wide and healthy. So he hit up his friends at the Wide Footwear Company, and they developed a study. They planned for over a year to make it happen. They planned their equipment, how they were going to measure, how they were going to collect data, how they were going to recruit their subjects. And then they went over and did it. And there's a whole story of how, you know, the first day went great. The next 3 days, they couldn't find anybody to measure. They thought the whole study was doomed. And then they met this guy who ended up being their driver the rest of the trip, who helped pull it all together, who sort of became the fifth member of the team. Anyways, I won't recount the whole story here, but they ended up scanning over 1,000 feet all over the island of Sri Lanka. And there's a couple huge takeaways. Let me just read the end of the study here. The study revealed a significant correlation between footwear usage and foot shape deformities, particularly focusing on hallux valgus angles, HVA, which again is the angle of the bunion on your foot. They continue, participants who predominantly wore shoes or closed toe box sandals inhibited higher HVA angles compared to those who were predominantly barefoot or wore open-toe sandals. This highlights the influence of footwear on toe alignment and foot health over time. Observations based on participants' professions and socioeconomic status unveiled interesting trends on foot health. Individuals with obligatory requirements for wearing formal shoes, such as upper-class school teachers and police officers, exhibited higher HVA values on average compared to those who were predominantly barefoot or wore flip-flops. Additionally, indigenous tribes displayed significantly lower HVA angles compared to other groups, suggesting a potential link between footwear habits and foot health disparities. Analyzing shoe wearing frequency revealed compelling insights into foot shape variations. Participants who wore shoes more frequently throughout the week exhibited higher HVA values, indicating a higher prevalence of misaligned toes. Conversely, elderly individuals who transitioned from barefoot lifestyles to wearing shoes later in life displayed better foot shape compared to those who wore shoes from an early age. Cool. They're saying that people who just held off wearing shoes until later in life maintained lower HVA angles. And they conclude, this underscores the importance of wearing shoes that accommodate the natural shape of the foot to maintain optimal foot health and alignment. And make no mistake, hallux valgus is a deformity. It's not natural. It's not healthy. It throws off our foundation. It throws off our gait. G-A-I-T. pattern of walking. So what they found in this study is that bunions are not based on age. It's not just old people across the board who get these things. It's older people who wear shoes a lot. And again, bunion is synonymous with high HVA or a high HVA value. Bunion is also synonymous with hallux valgus. It's also synonymous in my book with bunionette, if you have it on the pinky side. I think that's a big part of the underdiagnosis of bunions, is that people look at their crooked pinky as normal. It ain't, yo. It ain't normal. It's pretty consistent that all people who wear shoes start to develop either a bunion on their big toe or a bunionette on their pinky toe. So now, a healthy foot almost looks like a triangle, with the flat base of the triangle goes across the toes, and the two longer lines converge in a tip behind the heel. Does that make sense? So if you're looking down at your toes, you have a triangle with like the flat base going across your toes. Why are shoes not shaped like that? Why are shoes all pointy tipped at the toe? This causes us to have to cram our toes in there, cram our feet in, and over time leads to slow deformity of the bone structure. Now, your feet are the foundation of your entire body, your entire vessel, your entire machine. What if the foundation of a house was off, or the foundational bones or slats of the foundation started shifting over time? It'd be a little dangerous for the house. I looked up these stats yesterday. Apparently, 30% of the adult population has bunions. Also, 30% of the population has low back pain. I'm not saying that it's the same exact 30% of the population that has both, but at the very least, this shows that those two problems are very, very common. And I guarantee you, more people have bunions or bunionettes or deformed feet than what is reported, because I've never told my doctor about my feet, and I have a pretty deformed pinky toe from wearing shoes. So I think the 30% of people have bunions stat is too low. I do think most people's feet are misaligned from wearing shoes. Throwing off your foot structure can give you low back pain because you start walking differently. People's feet start aligning differently to compensate for this new bone shifting. I think some of the worst offenders of shoes have to be dress shoes. They have extremely pointy toes. They're always known for being uncomfortable. And women's dress shoes especially is so sad. They got the high heels, which causes the woman to really have to adjust in her hips because her weight gets pushed forward. If your heels lift up, your weight gets pushed forward. So then they compensate in their lower back by tilting their hips forward. Then they can get nerve impingement, all sorts of stuff. But what you really see is these messed up, broken feet in women who wear high heels and dress shoes a lot. I don't know why in our modern culture it's fashionable for a woman to squeeze their toes into this tiny little pointy tip of dress shoes. That don't make no sense, folks. We need to bring back function over fashion. Okay, if your shoes don't function at a bare level of just preserving your own body's shape, then what are we doing wearing them? Like, honestly, what are we doing? We're torturing ourselves at the sake of looking cool. But now that I see this, now that I can see that these shoes don't serve our function, they don't look cool to me anymore. Okay, so for something to look cool, it has to have the function. We can create wide toe shoes that are hip again. I'm so dumbfounded. I'm like constantly amazed that just take a look at the biggest shoe companies. Nike. How many billions of dollars do they have for research and development? And they don't know that the toes play? They don't know the shape of a baby's foot is shaped like a triangle with the wide base at the toes and the tip at the heel. They don't know that indigenous people oftentimes reject offers of shoes for brand new high-tech shoes. They go to these running cultures in Africa, offer them shoes, and these people say no. Maybe shoes are a little more unnecessary than we thought. So stick around. We are going to discuss the solutions at the end of the show. But right now, I'd like to bring it to the topic of earthing. What is earthing? Basically, you are an electric being. You have electric current and voltage flowing through your body all the time at varying frequencies, varying amplitudes. And you're kind of like an appliance, like a household appliance, whether it's a TV or a microwave. Like, we have energy inputs and we have ways to ground. You're familiar with the third prong on an electrical outlet plug. The third prong is known as the ground. It literally connects that appliance through a copper wire straight into the ground, into the earth. When something is ungrounded, there's potential for holding a higher charge within that appliance, potentially causing a shock or frying its components in the case of a power surge. Well, the same thing happens to your body. Since you are electric, you have all these energy gates in your feet that connect to the channels that run through your whole body, and it's through your feet that the grounding occurs. It's through your feet that you plug in the third prong to the wall and dissipate any stagnant electric charge, and also suffuse your body with negatively charged free electrons present in the surface of the earth, basically equalizing you to the same energy as the earth. Dr. William Rossi, a foot doctor from Massachusetts, published in Footwear News in 1997 that the sole or plantar surface of the foot is richly covered with some 1,300 nerve endings per square inch. That's more than found on any other part of the body of comparable size. And he goes on to discuss sensory response and how when we're walking, our feet send a lot of information back to us, which is huge, right? I mean, if you're walking, your feet are the ones telling you about the ground. Obviously, you can see the ground, but it is your feet that send you the most accurate information. And just from that math, 1,300 nerve endings per square inch on each foot, each of the soles of my feet is maybe 30 square inches. And I got two of them, so we're talking 1,300 times 60, 78,000 nerve endings just on the soles of one person's feet. 78,000 electrical nerve endings harvesting data and sending it back to the brain. That's amazing. Yeah, why do you think we're so ticklish on our feet? They're very sensitive. Now, there is a pretty rad book called Earthing, and I love the subtitle. It's The Most Important Health Discovery Ever. It's co-written by three authors, Clinton Ober, Stephen T. Sinatra, MD, and Martin Zucker. In this book, they discuss the phenomenon of earthing and the implications for health and healing. They back up their claims with lots of data, thermal and photographic images of the effects of earthing. You can actually observe inflammation due to stagnant energy being ungrounded. They discuss the acupuncture points and the energy channels within the body, how they have these terminals at the feet. You can kind of think of the feet as gates for this energy, and the energy flows through the gates into the ground, back into the body, basically connecting you as one organism to the earth. Now, when you wear shoes, guess what? You're stopping that. You need contact with the ground for it to flow electrically. And what are you doing? You're adding an inch of rubber between your electric vessel and our host electric vessel, the earth. You're basically adding a big stopper between there and saying, yeah, I don't need to ground. My electrical equalization is not that important. That's what you're saying when you put on shoes every time. They found in this book people with more efficient cardiovascular, respiratory, and nervous system function, just after sleeping on a grounding mat. So that's the other thing, is when we sleep, we're lifted up a few feet off the ground. We're like suspended in the air. And when we sleep, that's the time to recharge, rebuild, and re-equalize in the body. But we're not giving ourselves a chance to electrically ground when we sleep often. So what they created with these grounding mats, it's basically a mat that has a copper wire in it that can touch somewhere in your skin and then either plug into the wall and go into the ground cable, or, you know, you can dangle the wire out the window and stick it in the ground yourself. So they find through these grounding mats that levels of anxiety goes down, inflammation goes down, there's faster recovery in all sorts of injuries, reduced pain and soreness, reduced risk of metabolic syndrome. They claim that earthing properly will help you live longer and better. They write, anti-aging medicine involves the search for factors that can restore and maintain adequate energy resources and the circulation of vital energy throughout the body. This quest has been going on with humans throughout history. It's nothing new. Our research clearly shows that grounding has a powerful influence on the delicate balance between health and illness, and looming behind that, the prospect of living longer and better. This anti-aging prospect is clearly one of earthing's most attractive aspects. The dominant theory of aging, the concept of free radical oxidative damage to the body, was first proposed by Denham Harmon, MD, of the University of Nebraska in 1956. Blah, 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 blah. By understanding that the living matrix is a conductive fabric extending throughout the body, and that grounding connects the system to the earth and an infinite source of free electrons, one can see that earthing could prove to have far-reaching anti-aging, antioxidant, and anti-inflammaging, that's a cool word, anti-inflammaging effects. Long-term controlled animal studies will enable us to verify or refute this profound hypothesis. Research done in Germany has described the matrix in terms of a systemic reservoir of charges designed to maintain electrical balance and supply electrons in times of normal inflammatory need. Earthing provides recharging and keeps the reservoir full. Disconnection from the earth dries up the reservoir. Yeah, they basically argued that the earth's electrical energy helps us maintain our internal electrical stability for the normal functioning of all self-regulating and self-healing systems. It would make sense, right? If you had an appliance that wasn't getting the proper electricity, or there was some buildup of static charge, that it wouldn't function properly. One more benefit of properly grounding, properly earthing through your feet or while you sleep is the resetting of our biological clocks. They say, although the human body packs several biological clocks, called peripheral clocks, researchers have found that they are all under control of a master clock located in the head, more precisely in the suprachiasmatic nucleus, a pair of distinct groups of cells in the hypothalamus. One of the most important hypothalamic functions is to connect the nervous system to the endocrine system via the pituitary gland, the master gland of the body. Through hormonal secretions, it governs a multiplicity of activities affecting all body systems. Another function of the hypothalamus is to control the secretion of adrenocorticotropic hormone from the anterior pituitary gland, which in turn stimulates the secretion by the adrenal cortex of cortisol, the stress hormone. This system is so important for understanding the stress response that it is known as the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. The master biological clock receives its clues about prevailing light conditions from specialized cells in the retina. Signals about light conditions travel from the hypothalamus to the pineal gland, which controls the secretion of melatonin. Melatonin is secreted only in conditions of darkness. The biological clocks control virtually all body system functions, including, of course, the wake-sleep circadian cycle. From our research, we believe that not only light conditions, but Earth's energy as well coordinates the various biological clocks regulating hormone flow in the body. The slow and gentle rhythms of the Earth's energy field are essential for maintaining these clocks. One example we have discussed is the day-night cortisol rhythm that is normalized when sleep is improved through grounding. Another example is the secretion of melatonin, which happens at night. Melatonin is widely known as a sleep-promoting factor. Since we have seen in our earlier studies that grounded people sleep better, we hypothesize that the rhythm of this hormone is also normalized when sleeping grounded. Yeah, so a good night's sleep can help all sorts of health issues. As we know, we sort of do this whole scale healing during sleep as our cells rebuild, replenish. So they've already found that earthing helps you sleep, but they're wondering how the mechanism works, like how all the individual components inside work. Definitely has to do with your hormones. And it would make sense that your master clock is on this electrical impulse. The back of the book has this feedback chapter, what people say about earthing, and the individual testimonials are pretty phenomenal, pretty wild. Again, some of the issues that are solved with proper earthing, proper grounding, sciatica, nerve pain, you know, sleep apnea, stress relief, varicose veins, bad circulation, healing in general, all these things improved when the body can regulate with the earth's energy through earthing, through grounding. Hey, if you're not ready to give up shoes and walk barefoot, that's okay. You can buy a grounding mat. I would look into a grounding mattress or a grounding mat you put over your mattress to sleep on and see if that changes anything for you. So I think we covered the physical aspect of shoes deforming our bones, right? The joint between the metatarsal and the phalange on both the big toe and the pinky, they get pushed out to the side because our toes are getting cramped. That throws off our whole foundation. Not to mention when you're wearing an inch of rubber or a little bit less, doesn't really matter, you're cutting off the grounding capacity of your feet and your body. And you're cutting off your connection to the earth. You're cutting off the sensory response and stimulus of the soles of your feet. I get kind of sad sometimes when I see dogs, like certain breeds who are meant to run and hunt and scout, and they live in this tiny apartment. They live on a leash. They go for a walk once or twice a day, and they're not able to fully express and fully live up to what their primal coding has programmed them to want to do and to be good at. Your feet have these primal codings as well for being scouts, for being electrical gates, right? For being solid, aligned platforms. And we're not giving our feet the chance. We're keeping them trapped in these apartments all day, and we're taking them for a walk once a day. There is most definitely a epidemic of broken feet. I think obsession with shoe fashion, it's a form of Stockholm syndrome, where, if you're not familiar with what that is, in short, it's loving one's captor. It's being captive and abused by your captor, but still having this love for them because they are providing you with basic things. I believe we're all Stockholm syndromed into loving our Nikes and loving our high heels and loving our fashionable closed-toe sandals. At the sake of what? At the expense of our health. What is more important than health? Looking cool to your friends? Listen, if they're really your friends, they're not going to care what kind of shoes you're wearing. But it is wild to me that society is so obsessed with shoes and footwear. Like, if you don't have expensive, clean Nike shoes, a lot of times you're a total loser in schools. That's just how culture works. So isn't it crazy? Because the reason I'm picking on Nike is that they're the brand that's almost the most offensive. They have the narrowest shoes. Ask anyone who knows that they have slightly wide feet. They have such a hard time wearing Nikes. And just look at the toes of Nikes. They're pointed. They're not like the base of a triangle. They're not wide. So they have all this money, all these billions of dollars to research the human foot, and they're not aware that the human foot has wide toes. Crazy. That is crazy to me. Totally, totally crazy. And this is supposed to be a brand that supports the most elite athletes in the world, the most high-performing athletes. Yet they're breaking their feet? All right. All right, so let's get into the solutions. What do we do about all this? Step one, throw away all of your shoes that do not allow for splayed toes. I know, and this might be crazy to hear. Again, I'm not telling you what to do. This is what I would do. This is what I have done. And if you're inspired, you can do whatever you want. So throw in the trash all of your shoes that do not allow for splayed toes. Do the shoes have a point at the tip where the toes are? Throw them away. Goodbye. What are you going to do? You're going to replace those shoes with barefoot shoes and sandals. There's a lot more barefoot brands out there. You're going to have to do your research. I don't have any real good recommendations. I know the main ones are Earth Runners, Vivo, Zero. I don't have any good recommendations because honestly, I haven't found any that I really like. I just prefer going barefoot. And they do make wide toe box dress shoes and sandals, even though those aren't barefoot style. Barefoot style means a really thin sole and a flat arch, like no arch support, really flat sole. That's what barefoot style means. It also generally means wider toe, but you can get these dress shoes, boots, some sneakers that have a wide toe box. That's what you need to look for. So you've replaced all your shoes. You threw away all the ones that didn't allow for your toes to display. You went and bought some barefoot brands. You went and bought some wide toe box shoes if you need them. But the most important thing is to, in my opinion, walk barefoot outside. Start walking barefoot. Whether it's for a 20-minute walk a day or it's just how you get around now. Prioritize grass, sand, and nature trails. The concrete can hurt you at first because concrete's a little unnatural. If we're trying to tap back into nature, we would be walking on, like I said, grass, sand, nature trails, dirt, and rocks. I personally like rough terrain, but the concrete is unnatural. It's extremely dense, and if you're not used to walking barefoot, you can get back pain from this because people can tend to dig their heels into the ground or like slam their heels as they're walking. If you're on concrete, that's going to send a shockwave up your spine, potentially causing all sorts of issues. You're going to want to practice walking before you have experience walking on the concrete. The way you practice walking is slowly, extremely slow. Put your heel down first, and then bring the outside of your foot down, and the sides, and then the front of the foot. That's the slow ninja way to train yourself to walk barefoot, is to walk very slowly, to make sure every step is silent, can't hear it, that you're starting with the heel, and then coming down on the outside, the sides of the feet, and then you finish and flatten out the foot and push off the toe. It should be like a rocking from back to front. Heel, side, front. So train yourself to walk barefoot outside. Be careful, but also don't worry. I think people get really afraid of, oh my God, germs, bacteria. It's like, walking barefoot's not going to kill you. You may step on something sharp. You may step on sticks and burrs and thorns. You may step in poop. You may step in anything nasty. But again, don't worry. Like, our feet are meant to do this. You can wash them out. You can remove the splinters. I've pulled out so many splinters from my feet. But guess what? Over time, it happens less and less. Why? Because we build up calluses. You actually end up building pretty dang thick, feels like leather, calluses all on the bottom of your feet. You know what a dog's paw feels like? The pad on the dog's paw? That's kind of what your feet will develop if you walk barefoot enough. And again, that's a good thing because that's the protection. So that means you're going to be getting less and less stickers in your foot, less and less injury, less and less cuts. I said, yeah, don't walk on concrete so much. You don't want to shock your spine by walking into your heels. If you have to walk on concrete because that's all that's around, practice, like I was saying, heel, side, toe, nice and slow, silent steps. also increase the amount of time that you're walking barefoot over time. Meaning, if you're brand new to it, see how 30 minutes feels and see how 10 minutes feels, right? I forget sometimes that I live barefoot. I live outside. I'm walking barefoot all day. And I'm a farmer. So yeah, sometimes I wear my wide boots, but most of the time I'm barefoot. We're working on really rough terrain. There's all sorts of trash in the dirt sometimes. There's all sorts of sticks and thorns coming out in the weeds. And yeah, I get my cuts, I get my bruises, I get my calluses, but my feet are so strong right now. I'm always grounding. And guess what? My feet are getting wider. That pinky angle is going down. So you can train your feet to regrow. It takes time, but you can do it. Now, if you have a bunion or a bunionette, you know, the misaligned big toe or pinky, I don't think just walking barefoot is going to reform your feet. You're going to need to do some specific exercises to strengthen and rebuild the muscles in your feet. Because when they're trapped in shoes, muscles atrophy. So here's a few general strength exercises you can do. This first one is a general strength and mobility exercise. It gets all the muscles in your feet working again. If you haven't done this before, it's probably going to feel weird. It wakes up the muscles on the sides of your feet and in your toes and inside your feet. And I call it slow ankle circles through full range of motion. But you're going to do it four different ways. You're going to do it with contracted toes. So basically squeeze your toes, make a fist with your foot on one foot, and then elevate it off the ground so it's off the ground. Contract your toes, squeeze them like a fist, and then through the full range of motion, make a slow circle with that foot. So your ankle is working with contracted toes and you're going clockwise. You're doing a slow clockwise circle. Do about 10 of these circles. Chances are, if this is new for you, you're going to cramp up before those 10 are done. You might cramp up instantly. That's good. That shows you what muscles aren't fully strong yet. What I also like about this is that at a certain point in the circle, you might feel it be very uncomfortable or very weak. That's good too, because it shows you exactly where the weak parts are. After you do contracted toes clockwise, you're going to do contracted toes counterclockwise, 10 circles, and then shake out your foot. At this point, I like to switch feet, do the same thing on the left, or then the other foot. Go contracted clockwise, 10, contracted counterclockwise, 10. And then you go back to the other foot. I like to go splayed toes clockwise, 10. So now we're extending our toes. It's not a fist. It's like a high five on the foot. You know, toes pointed up, actually extended. Heel lifted off the ground. We're going to do slow clockwise circles, 10 of them. Full range of motion, keeping your toes extended the entire time. After you do 10, you can switch direction and do counterclockwise. Now you will feel it. You're going to feel some muscles cramp, like I said. You're going to feel which ones are weak. It's all good. The more you do this, the stronger they get. You're going to feel all sorts of things crack and creak to life. And do both feet. So it takes a while because you're doing four different motions for each foot. You're doing contracted clockwise, contracted counterclockwise. You're doing splayed clockwise and splayed counterclockwise. You're doing on each foot. So it might take 10 minutes, but that's great. After you do that, just walk around, shake them out, you know, shake them, get loose. Do it until you cramp or until you're sore, and then just stop. But that's a good one, I find, for just the general strength of the feet. It wakes up all these muscles on the insides and the outsides. Right, it's getting our ankle to fully be mobile again. It's getting our toes to learn how to splay and move. Now, there's strength training of the toes we can do specifically. That last one was more like the whole foot. This one I like to call foot crawls. It's basically, you can just sit in a chair, put your feet flat on the ground, and then bunch your toes so that your foot crawls forward an inch. Like if you bunch your toes, it drags your heel forward an inch. Do you see that? And then let go of the bunched toes so that they jump an inch forward. And you're basically scooching your foot across the ground with your toes. If you have a problem with the big toe, you can focus on the big toe grabbing the ground and pulling. If you have a problem with the pinky, you can kind of focus on the pinky or the small toes. I like to use the five toes together and try to get my foot back online as like a unit. So I'm basically just crawling across the ground. After my leg is extended, I'll just bring it back under the chair and do it again. These are kind of like toe pull-ups in a way. It just gets them to be used. Again, we're doing this barefoot, obviously. There's also toe push-ups you can kind of do. You can put resistance against your toe just with your finger and then try to extend your toe against the weight of your finger, right? And this is how we can start to train individual toes. Have you guys seen Kill Bill? There's that great scene where Uma Thurman comes out of the hospital and she finds the truck and she's in there and she realizes she's still paralyzed. And she says, wiggle your big toe. And she's just trying to send that mind-muscle connection from her brain to her big toe. And eventually it worked. You can do this too. Try wiggling your pinky toe. Try it. It's going to be super awkward at first, but you can develop that independence. You'll come up with your own techniques for it. Like I said, resistance, just the straight up mind muscle thing. Resistance bands and rubber bands are also good ones. If you have a big HVA or a big bunion on your big toes, you know, your big toes are misaligned on both feet, you can take a thick rubber band or a few rubber bands and put them around each big toe, meaning one rubber band around both of your big toes, and then space your feet apart so that the rubber bands are taut. And then you can turn your feet outwardly to increase the tension on the band, increase the resistance pulling on your toe, and then you can do your exercises pulling it back and forth, back and forth. We're just waking up these muscles. We're waking up these tendons. We're starting to realign this deformity. And here's another one that I like for toe independence. I just came up with this recently. Put your heel on the ground and then put your big toe on the ground. And imagine that your heel is like your thumb on your hand and your big toe is like your index finger, and you have these pinchers right between your thumb and index finger. You can pinch, you can grab anything. Imagine that that's on your feet between your heel and your big toe. Imagine you have these pinchers and you can pinch together. Now do that on the ground. Put your heel on the ground and pinch the ground with your big toe. Okay, now we're getting strength into the big toe. Once the heel and the big toe are pinching the ground, now try opening up the rest of your foot. Try throwing the pinky out away as far as you can. And then eventually throw your pinky on the ground, your pinky toe. At this point, the heel, the big toe, and the pinky are the only things that are touching the ground. This has done wonders for me and my feet with my mind muscle connection and bringing strength back into like the width of my foot between my big toe and my pinky. I'm learning how to use them both independently at the same time rather than just shoving my feet into shoes, and now they're kind of like this club, kind of like this stump that's just working as one thing. It's like, no, how many bones do we have in the foot? We have that many for a reason. It's supposed to be very flexible and mobile and strong. So again, if that last one was unclear, heel on the ground, pinch the ground with your big toe and your heel. Now, open your foot wide, touch your pinky to the ground. Now touch the rest of your toes to the ground, and you've created an arch. This is how to build up our own arch naturally. A natural arch is like a shock spring, meaning it absorbs a lot of the shock as you're walking. And we can rebuild that, just like we can rebuild our alignment. We can rebuild proper arches and strong feet. So I made sure to put the exercise before the massage because I'm about to get into the massage component now. But as massage is a little passive, I think exercise, if I had to choose one, I would choose the exercise. Why? Because it's training my muscles to be strong. Massage doesn't train your muscles to be strong. It trains them to be loose. We do want both, but I'd rather have the practical strength in my feet than just looseness from massage. But the massage is huge because we can wake up these muscles and this fascia and these blood vessels that have been stagnant for so long. So there's a few great massage techniques you can use on your feet to get them to start to wake up and realign. Basically, step one, I like to break up the stagnant fascia around the tops and sides of my feet and ankles. I do this with my hands, with or without oil. Like you just start rubbing tops of your feet with your knuckles, with the direction of the bones and the tendons. With oil is nice. I like to use coconut oil, right? Get your fingers and your knuckles kind of in between the bones of the feet, in between the metatarsals. Break up that stagnant fascia. Fascia is like these layers of very thin muscle that stack on top of each other. So just general massage, breaking up stagnant fascia with your hands. Here's another one. Take a butter knife and scrape the back of it, like the dull edge of it, up and down your ankles, feet, and lower legs. What this does is it stimulates the superficial tissue, the superficial fascia, like the top layer of the fascia. And you may experience some very sensitive or nervy feelings. Maybe not, though. But this shows you what's very sensitive, what hasn't really woken up yet. And it feels really good. Just take that dull edge of a knife and sort of rub it lightly against your ankles. My ankles are pretty beat up, too, from skateboarding. So when I do this, it feels really good and I can feel things wake up. And then when I'm walking later, it just feels different. So I would do this up and down around both feet and ankles for a few minutes each. And I would do this before using your feet. So I wouldn't do this like before bed. I would try this in the morning or before a workout or something. Of course, you have the lacrosse ball or the wooden dowel like a roller. You can use that under your feet, standing on a lacrosse ball or a baseball. Really helps break up the knots in the muscles of your arches and of your soles. You can also get them in between the phalanges and kind of start to space those things out. I do like a lacrosse ball. And then what you can do is as you're stepping on the lacrosse ball, so it's in the center of your sole under your arch, right? And you're putting a little weight on it. Now start to flex your toes. Right? So we're creating a little bit more tension in the arch. We're flexing our toes and we're getting a deeper massage. I also like to lace my fingers through my toes, which can be tough because our toes are used to being so cramped up together that it's almost impossible. I also have fat knuckles, fat fingers. It's really hard sometimes to get all your fingers in between those four spaces of your toes. But do it and then move your hand and foot in a circle through the range of motion. And that's just going to start to wake up your toes and give them a little more space. People also use toe spacers. I bought a pair. They're just little rubber things you put over your toes and they add, you know, maybe half inch of space in between each toe. I like using those. And they do work to help re-widen your feet a little bit. You can wear toe spacers with sandals. You can wear them barefoot. You can wear them under your socks and shoes, only if your shoes are wide enough to accept a newly spaced group of toes, right? And of course, you got your reflexology. You can just go to your massage parlor, ask for a foot massage. They pretty much know what they're doing. They'll feel where the tensions are, but they also kind of just give your whole feet situation a rub down, depending on how long you want. Honestly, I wouldn't go longer than 45 minutes on just the feet. I've done an hour foot massage, and I've honestly felt like it was too long. And like I said, I put massage component last because I think it's the least important. I think removing shoes that are constrictive out from your house is the most important thing. Stop wearing pointy-toed shoes. Stop wearing any shoes that aren't flat and barefoot. Okay, arch supports is like using crutches all the time. If you use crutches all the time, your leg is going to stop working. So if you use arch supports all the time, your arches are going to stop working. The human body is capable of supporting your arch, supporting the entire weight of your body when given the chance. So the most important thing is removing all the shoes from the house that are constricting your feet and causing deformity. Goodbye, trash. Don't even give them away. The second most important thing is the strength training and mobility. You got your general exercises, your foot circles, your crawls and your push-ups and whatnot. And then you have your specific exercises where you can design them based on what your foot needs. Plus, there's a lot of great videos out there. The Earth Runners YouTube and the My Foot Function YouTube has great videos on rehabbing the feet with various tools and without tools. Again, big shout out to My Foot Function. I follow them. They're one of the groups that helped conduct the shoe effect study in Sri Lanka. They put out great visual information on Instagram and their website, My Foot Function. And they promote different brands of the barefoot shoes to wear. Now, the reason I'm not promoting many brands is because I don't really have any good recommendations. I guess I do have a special shout out. There is a brand new shoe company that my friend has started. They are wide toe box, barefoot style. They're vegan materials, so no leather. And they're skate shoes. I got to give a shout out. Kyle Kenny with the brand Kota. K-O-T-A. Brand new. Be sure to check them out. I haven't got my box in the mail yet, so I can't tell you how they feel. But we're going to keep working on them and make these the best shoes you can get. Kota Biodynamics. All right. So the fact that we have solutions, that we can rewild our feet, that we can reform our feet, that we can realign our toes, re-strengthen our muscles, is good. I like solutions. It's not all doom and gloom. But the situation is pretty grim. We can see that we've been unintentionally deforming ourselves for generations with something as simple and common and widespread as footwear, shoes. But it's so messed up to me that we've let it go on for this long without really noticing anything. It's crazy to me that these shoe companies have the biggest budgets for research and development, and they still don't know how a human foot should be shaped. It's basic. It's so mind-blowing. I mean, if you take this to the end, you almost have to ask yourself, is this intentional? You know, we uncover a lot of deceptions in the world on this show. We can see that a lot of the food industry is extremely damaging when eaten regularly. And there are many, many people who do believe that it is intentional. That it is an intentional poisoning, a dumbing down of the populace. And when you start to read documents by high-level social engineers and controllers, and they write that they want to do this, they write that they are doing it, that they celebrate these techniques of mind control through control of the body, physical body, food, media. And that's why I wouldn't put it past them to include footwear in that. That footwear is actually being used as a weapon against us. Potentially. Maybe everyone's just ignorant to the true shape of human feet. But to me, that doesn't quite make sense. We're starting to see people get it. We're starting to see these barefoot brands come out. I mentioned a few of them, and people are taking to them, you know. But I still don't really see those very much out there in the wild. In the cities, you see Nikes and Adidas. And all sorts of designer, you know, European things, dress shoes. Again, the pointy tips are destroying us. They're destroying our feet, destroying our health. Our toes are not shaped like that. So is it intentional? Is it a mistake? It doesn't really matter because the solution is going to be the same. Throw away those old shoes, get new ones that actually fit and support the shape of the foot, and walk barefoot. I mean, we haven't really even discussed the necessity of shoes to begin with. You know, there are a lot of hardworking barefooters out there. And you see a lot of these individuals in indigenous tribes in all sorts of continents, Asia, Australia, Africa, and even America. The Seminole Indians are known for being barefoot. They lived in the Everglades in Florida, in part, and they were a barefoot culture. The Americans and the colonialists tried to get them to wear shoes, and the Seminoles refused. Now, if you can find a photo of a Seminole foot, it's amazing how healthy their feet look. They're super wide, super strong, amazing toe splay, amazing alignment of the toes. And they're out here in the land of snakes, crocodiles, and mosquitoes, right? Sharp, thorny plants, rough terrain, the jungle swamp of the Everglades in South Florida. They didn't need shoes. Oh, the best coconut tree climbers, you're going to see them doing it barefoot. Why? Well, you have the most grip, you have the most flexibility, and you have the most strength barefoot. No other animals need to wear shoes. Why do we? And again, if you're afraid of germs, I don't really know what to tell you. I walk barefoot. I live barefoot all day, every day. There's cats around. There's lizards around. There's snakes. There's frogs. There's trash. There's all sorts of stuff. None of it's getting me sick. What is going to contribute more to a deterioration of internal cleanliness and internal health would be the food you eat. So if you're afraid of germs, but you still eat dead animals, I just don't know what to tell you because your priorities are backwards. Diet has more to do with internal cleanliness and health and immune function, if you like that phrase. As the doctor and the co-authors of Earthing explained, the energetic connection to the earth is so crucial that it enhances our immune function. It enhances our ability to sleep, our ability to deploy the proper hormones and regulate our entire chemistry. So it's pretty crazy to me that we've been foot binding for so many generations, not even really knowing it. I kind of had to go through this emotional processing of it recently where I just sat and cried because every time I put on shoes in the first 30 years of my life, I was unwittingly harming myself. I was unwittingly deforming my feet. And I think I knew it. I always knew shoes were uncomfortable. I always kicked them off as soon as I could. But again, I still say unwittingly because it didn't click in my mind. I didn't know what I was doing consciously. But now I do. Now I can tell. Our feet are meant to be free. It feels much better walking barefoot. You have more sensitivity. you have a better energetic connection to the earth, so that way we can ground electrically, discharge stagnant electricity, fill your body with negatively charged electrons, equalize to the earth's energy. Not to mention our alignment can be preserved and even reformed. If your feet are deformed, you can reform them by walking barefoot and doing those exercises we talked about. So, hey, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Hope it piqued some interest in living barefoot, walking barefoot, questioning the role of shoes. Why do we have them? It's mostly for fashion, if you really think about it. Mostly. But let's get the function back in there. Let's get functional footwear that also looks good happening. We can create fashion around wide toe box, flat shoes. We can. And we can live without deforming our feet. Your feet are the foundation of the rest of your body. Treat your foundation with love and respect and freedom. Make sure it's operating to its full expression, its full potential, its full alignment. You may experience less back pain. You may experience higher performance in your sports and activities. You may experience less foot pain. You may experience better sleeping. You may experience better grounding and a more harmonious electrical energy and a more harmonious life. Hope you enjoyed the show, y'all. Stay tuned for the next one, where we drop some more radical health. Until then, much love. Talk to you next time. Radical health.